This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special podcast edition of Sunday Night's Main Event. To all of you out there who are regular listeners and supporters of the show, you know what is about to happen. But I do think that this particular episode of the show is going to find its way to a few new eyes and ears just due to my guests. So with that in mind, I wanted to introduce myself. Hi, I'm Jason Agnew. I'm a guy who works in Canadian media and has hosted a professional wrestling radio show for the past 20 years. Wrestling is something I loved as a kid, and my friends all moved away from it, but I never grew out of it. And neither have my three guests on today's show. Andrew Fung, K. Trevor Wilson, and Carlos Bustamante. You know the names, you know the faces, you've seen them on TV. But did you know that they're all lifelong professional wrestling fans? Well, that is what we're going to talk about on today's show, and how finding other professional wrestling fans in your life has the ability to bond you to them. It's like a secret language that we speak, and we're going to be speaking that language on today's show. So listen, if you found the show and you are a professional wrestling fan, then find us. Join our little community by following along with our radio show. It airs every Sunday night on TSN Radio and across the iHeartRadio Talk Network. And you can find it online, because everybody's podcasting, at SundayNightsMainEvent.com. That's the weekly show. If you really get into it, we also have daily shows that go out to our patrons at patreon.com/SNMEradio. But enough out of me, let's get into it. Here is my chat with the three individuals I mentioned on the eve of WrestleMania 37 week. Well, welcome to a midweek edition and a very special edition of Sunday Night's Main Event podcast coming at you from the family. I've wanted to do a roundtable show for a while, but I didn't think that I'd be able to launch it with a panel quite like this. This is a little secret society of performers here that are all from all different walks of my life that all love professional wrestling. So let me introduce these gentlemen. I mean, if you're watching this, you know their faces already. First of all, a gentleman who plays Kimchi on Kim's Convenience. He is going to be starring in a new sitcom called Run the Burbs. He hails from Calgary with the dramatic pause, Alberta, Canada, Andrew Fung. Welcome to it, my friend.
Thank you very much, man. I love, out of all the podcast requests, because my other guests will know what I'm talking about. When pandemic hit, we got 1,000 podcast requests. But this one is near and dear to my heart, pro wrestling, man. Thank you very much.
Now, I got to ask you, Andy, before we introduce the other guests, when you were cast as Kimchi on Kim's Convenience, at any point, did you try to insert a Kamala reference into the show?
Not a Kamala reference, but they asked me for feedback on the set, like my apartment.
Yeah.
And I kept sending them like John Cena wrestling belt requests, because I just was like, can I get a belt, a spinner belt? Can I get a belt here? Can I get something here? None of it made it in. But there was a line in season one where I talk with my landlord and I say, oh, he always wants to wrestle. So to which Lance Storm was a big fan of the show, to which for the last 5 years, I have constantly said, hey, you think we can get Lance Storm to play our landlord, over and over again? They have, again, not accepted my idea, but...
You got a whole nother sitcom coming up here, so which I'm sure will filter its way into our podcast. Let me get to the other guests that are on as well. Okay, this next gentleman, he plays Squirrely Dan on Letterkenny. He has the greatest stand-up routine involving wrestling that I have ever heard in my life about Scott the Jobber. If you haven't heard it, go find it and listen to it. I love it. Also, follow this gentleman on Instagram, because I believe he has the largest wrestling t-shirt collection ever. K. Trevor Wilson, welcome to it, my friend. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me. Nice to be talking to people.
Yeah, that's so different, right? Well, it's on Zoom, so we're keeping the pandemic life here. K. Trev, though, your collection of t-shirts is insane. If you had to pick a favorite, though, is that possible? Do you have one?
It's really hard, because, I mean, there's I've collected so many great shirts over the years. I have a few coming up that haven't, I just went to the storage locker and pulled out two more bins of t-shirts to photograph. And I've got a great Muda t-shirt. And that is like pretty close to my favorite. I got a great Muda and a Ricky the Dragon Steamboat coming up, which nice. I'm really excited about. But I mean, like, so many t-shirts are have so many different memories to them. Like, I have a t-shirt that I was given to me by Bobby Roode, actually, mm-hmm. in exchange for some Letterkenny hats. And like, that's got a lot of special meaning to it. I've got like a Davey Boy Smith Jr. shirt that I bought off of him at a live event. And I took a picture with him, and I could tell he was like really hoping no one else noticed that I was getting a picture with him so that there wouldn't be a mob of pictures happening. You know, lot of shirts with a lot of memories.
I am looking forward to it. So far we've already had a Lance Storm reference, a Bobby Roode personal reference. This next gentleman is normally the one doing the interviewing on this show. He will be the interviewee along with our other two panelists, the longtime host of The Zone on YTV, now one of the hosts of Entertainment Tonight Canada, Carlos Bustamante. How are you, friend?
Doing very good. Doing very well. Thanks. Happy to take any opportunity to talk about wrestling with people outside of my house. Because I can talk to my wife about it a little bit. It only goes mm-hmm. so far, you know. But once we get out there into the big, weird, wild world of wrestling, I'm very excited.
Okay, so Carlos, if Andrew is shoes and belts and if K-Trev is t-shirts, then, I mean, what is it for you?
I don't have physical things that I collect now. When I was younger, we used to collect the big WWF
the LJN
figures, obviously the LJN figures.
Yeah.
But you know, when we moved from our apartment in Toronto out to the burbs, shout out Andrew Funk, king of the burbs, moved out to the burbs, I kind of like put away a lot of that stuff. So right now it's mostly I collect memories. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they take up a lot less space.
Yeah. We had Lance Storm, Bobby Roode, Bret the Hitman Hart is a good memory of mine. Mm-hmm. I have one of those. He gave me a nice slam one time. So that's one.
That's awesome.
Were you the legendary reporter that he hurt and therefore was never allowed to touch a reporter again?
No, because I know how to fall.
Okay, good. You know how to take a bump. That's excellent. Well, that's great. Well, listen, guys, I mean, this is pretty cool. Everyone's from different walks of life. We're all performers. But the one thing that we have all really had in common, and I've talked to you in depth about pro wrestling so much in different settings, but I haven't ever discussed with you guys how you got into it. Listen, we're going to talk about Mania. It's the week before Mania right here. But, this is something that you talk to a lot of people in our different worlds and in our different industries. And if wrestling ever comes up, a lot of it is, you know, I used to like it as a kid, but I grew out of it. We have not grown out of it. And I feel like everyone is proud to have not grown out of it. But what was it that, how did you get into it? And then what made you stick with it? So first memories and lasting memories. Andrew, I mean, from Calgary, oh my goodness, Stampede to begin with. But was that it for you?
It was actually my older cousin, Kian, and I loved him so much. And he was so cool. And he got me and my other cousin this box of WWF trading cards. And I would go and read them, and it would have like all the moments from all the years. And it kind of spiraled of like getting VHS tapes at the video store. And I remember like, you know, you get the tape and it would have the card on the back and you would like read and you know some people. Tape trading was such a big part. And as we went into wrestling in the mid 90s, 96, 97, 98, it was about the PWI magazine, the top 500. Past the first 200, you'd be like, who are all these other wrestlers? And that's what it was. And then as wrestling evolved into the Attitude Era and into the Ruthless Aggression Era, it kind of just blew up because it became part of the mainstream. And it triggered this side of me because I'm such a performer, like I'm a comedian. I love that aspect of wrestling. And then the lasting side, it isn't so much like, I just love like the getaway. Like it's something it's so ridiculous and so out there, and it's not my job. And it keeps me connected to my buddies from high school, you know. Yep. But I've just kind of always loved the swagger with pro wrestling, and I've kind of always tried to follow it as best as I can. But like I think as my fellow panelists will agree, as you get older, it's harder because you know you got family, you got kids, you got work, you got touring, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I can sit down and watch a Rumble with my buddies, and it's like being a kid mm-hmm. again. And that's the best. And I love right now because we got to watch Rumble virtually, you know, and like we're here and that's the excitement behind it. And if you see the belts behind me during quarantine, I went deep into pro wrestling belts. You needed something. So I went deep, and I'd always been into belts, but I got heavy into it.
Oh my goodness. All right. So yeah, I mean, it's not your job, but some of us can integrate into our work, as have I. And K-Trev, I mentioned with you, I saw you do that Scott routine and it was like, oh my God, I could relate to it so much so. But where did you first dive in and then stick with it?
I mean, when I was a kid, there was Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling. The cartoon was on TV. I was already a big Mr. T fan, and then Mr. T was teamed up with Hulk Hogan everywhere. So that got me started watching. And like my first like clear memories, like I remember watching Rock and Wrestling. I remember having the trading cards, and like I remember catching bits and pieces of wrestling. And then I vividly remember the aftermath of WrestleMania 5. Like I remember watching Superstars one day, and they were recapping Bret Hart and Bad News Brown in the Battle Royal from WrestleMania 4, I guess, when Bad News Brown turned on Bret Hart and threw him out. And then Bret came back and smashed the trophy.
Yeah.
And I vivid, like I have clear memories of that that instance. And then, you know, it was just like they were bigger than life people. They were superheroes. They were the closest thing to superheroes we had. They were guys in masks and capes flying through the air, doing impossible feats of strength. You know, it was the only place you could go to see a real life giant. And then, I liked it. It was, you know, the stories were fun. It was interesting. And then, like, you know, I was one of those kids that, like, you know, held out that wrestling was real right up until it was impossible to say that, right up until Vince McMahon went on a sat on the stand and admitted that wrestling was fake, so he didn't go to prison. And and then after that, I became even more obsessed with it, because I was like, this whole industry just got together one day and was like, okay, we're going to fake it forever now. And then I just became obsessed with learning about the history and like, how did it go from, you know, the world's first sport to the world's first sports entertainment. Like it was, and then, yeah, I've just stuck with it. It's never gotten boring for me. Even when all my friends were like, wrestling was lame, I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. This is the best. And I'm going to keep watching this, and I'm going to find new friends who will watch it with me.
I mean, you're right. When it came to when that curtain was pulled back, you know, that was like a second wave for me. And then it kind of took me, it was about at the same time when I was getting into media and starting to work. And I mean, I'll throw to you here, Carlos, because obviously, you know, working on this side of the microphone and getting to interview so many people, it was cool to not just see them as the character, but also see who these humans were that decided on this as a career. But going back even before you got to do that, before I got to do that, how did you get into it?
Much the same as these two guys here. It was a product of when we grew up. Like I grew up in the 80s around the same time. And so it just was as like watching wrestling was the same thing as just watching Saturday morning cartoons. It was there. It was always on. You were watching it all the time. I have a cousin who lives in Vancouver, and we used to live together in Vancouver when I was a little kid. And he loved wrestling so much. Just so, so, so much. And my first big like memories of seeing anything, you know, Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, anyone who was cut open, bleeding, was with my cousin. And I remember being horrified, like being a little kid being like, oh my God, look at all that blood. But then it just became a normal thing. And like the collecting the toys, all the commercials, rock and wrestling, cartoon, like everything I had. I don't know if you guys had this too, but I had like the Hulkamania workout set when I was a little kid that came with like the Hulkamania headband and like these two little blue weights and the cassette tape that had the songs and like Hulk Hogan cheering you on and all that. Like that was just a part of life. Like that was just it. So between my cousin, myself, my big brother, it was kind of always on. And so you know, if you go through your memories, you can kind of pinpoint all the little moments, like the ones that you guys were talking about. Hogan slamming Andre, Marty Jannetty getting kicked through the glass, like all that stuff from when you were younger is just a part of who you are. And I don't know if you guys have the same experience, but because I grew up in that era, watching promos from that era and the performers like that big, like not just their size. Speaking of which, not just their size, but like their personas being so big that it kind of seeped into the way that you think about performance. And it seeped into the way that I thought about performance. And it really lent itself to what I was doing when I was working on YTV, which was just kind of being big, sometimes grandiose, silly, whatever. A lot of that was just pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, it really has worked our way as all of us are performers. You know, these are larger than life characters. And I don't think I'm ever going to not hear K. Trevor Wilson say, you know, these were the giants that I looked up to. And now looking at your stature, K. Trevor, I'm sure people watch you on TV and say that exact thing. You know, we've all also mentioned Friends and how this is an excuse to talk to friends. And I mean, for me, I've made so many friends out of pro wrestling too, because there is a bit of a special bond when you figure out that someone else also likes pro wrestling. And, you know, K-Trev, I can go back to, I knew you first as a comic, but when that routine hit and then we engaged, because there's that door that opens and,
yep.
Oh, right? Like, it's just, whatever setting you're in, if you're talking about it, you know that person knows this, and it just really does, you find that common link.
I think all wrestling fans, because we've had so many friends abandon us over wrestling over these, you know, like, I don't mean like we're not friends anymore, but they're just like, I'm not going to watch wrestling with you anymore. And you have to find that you're always very reserved about revealing how much you're into wrestling until that person gives you the cue that they are also that into wrestling. And then it's like, okay, now we can really open up about this. It's like, so, like, you know, what ECW videos did you used to buy? Like, what was your first pay-per-view? Like, how deep do you want to go into this? Like,
it is also weird when it pops up. Like, Carlos, have you done an interview or something else, but all of a sudden this wrestling comes out somehow from someone that you don't expect?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about, I have a couple friends who are press in New York and in near LA that we, during pandemic, we've been talking a lot because obviously we can't see each other. But the way we met was we were on a press junket in Tokyo, Japan, of all places. And I remember I was on a bus and everyone's talking about, oh, what are you going to do later? What are you going to do tonight? What are you going to do? Da, da, da. And I turned to the person next to me and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go see if I can catch a wrestling show. And she was like a New Japan show? And I went, we're best friends. Like, immediately. And then the third guy was like, did you say New Japan? Like, there's a New Japan show tonight? I'm like, yup. Yeah, we didn't get a chance to go. We really tried. Like, I'm telling you, we tried. Our schedule didn't let it happen. But that's the kind of thing you guys are talking about. Like, once that door opens, like the forbidden door, if you can, yeah. Once that door opens, it's just like flood. Let's talk about whatever we can talk about. And like, when you talk about, you know, you just said, oh, what ECW tapes did you watch growing up? Like, that very specific scenario that happened to me, that's a very specific type of wrestling fan. For someone to be able to say, yeah, I want to go see Tanahashi tonight. You know that you're in deep, like you're in deep right away.
Yep.
Well, Andrew, you mentioned that obviously this is a way to keep connected with people, and we've talked about that. And for you, I mean, you've just moved from Calgary to Toronto, but what was it? Was it 2 years ago? Didn't you get together with friends to go to the Royal Rumble? Because you were there for the Nakamura win, right?
Yeah, it always been a dream to go to a Rumble. And I think a lot of people say it's a dream to go to Mania. No, to me, it was the Rumble, because you got to see 30 superstars, you know, over the top rope, you know, battle royale. And now with the women's Rumble, it was the first women's Rumble. We were just so excited because, like, you know, last 4 or 5 years has been a revolution where women's wrestling is like, so like you're into it now, you care, you know? And so we were like, let's do it. And we went to Philly to watch NXT. The first time I ever cried, like I cried tears watching Andrade and Gargano. And like, I never thought a grown man could be brought to tears like that. It was a work of art. But yeah, then we watched the Rumble, and because it's also special because the Rumble was always on the weekend of my birthday. It was always my birthday weekend.
Okay.
So it was always a thing we did to go watch the Rumble somehow. And we've had the pool and we've had the charts and stuff like that. And so it truly is an excuse to talk to friends. And I think in this pandemic, just popping in with friends like, hey, I'm watching AEW. Oh, I'm watching Raw. I'm watching SmackDown. This is really cool. You know, we've gushed about Roman Reigns' heel run, which is amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the Hurt Business, and like, that's the most interesting thing on that show. And then for them to break it up is heartbreaking, you know? But yeah, it's like something you just kind of check in on, and that's really nice. But like that whole concept around friendship is great, because I've made such lifelong friends with wrestling.
Yeah, that it's fun. Yep. It's so funny to say, but we're all sitting here, we're all nodding along. It's absolutely true. I mean, you and I bonded. I think it was over Samoa Joe going to NXT when we first met, and we had this in-depth conversation at Loose Moose out in Calgary, where I'd never met you before, but that came up. Oh boy, all of a sudden we're chatting. Okay, so you've gone a little bit more in depth there, so we might as well take a deeper dive into what's going on for this WrestleMania, mentioning Roman Reigns, mentioning how we all probably feel the Hurt Business being broken up is an absolute shame. I want to talk about the fact that, you know, when we grew up, we talked about the tape trading already and how, you know, you could get those tapes, know some people, not know others, but it was sometimes waiting 30 days and going to the video store. It was something that was a night, whether it be closed circuit, you're watching it with friends, two pay-per-view, but it was a night. Then it expanded into maybe a weekend when you add NXT. Now it is a week-long event, if not more. Wrestling just doesn't stop. It's nice that it's always there, but at what point does it hit too much? Because personally, covering what I do, I've seen UFC, to me, topple over that point where events weren't special anymore. Do you think, Carlos, that we've hit this point with wrestling that they're just putting out too much product for the sake of putting out too much?
I think this is a hard year to be able to tell that specifically. I think just the feelings around everything are so weird this year that to be able to say whether it is too much, at least for me personally, is a bit hard, because I do like being able to check in on the shows on any kind of given day. Like, I do like the fact that almost at any time, any day of the week, I can go online and check out something that's happening or had been happening. And I think that's really cool. With regards to WrestleMania specifically, you know, not when it was a one night thing, like that's the thing, you know, and you wait all year for this. This is the biggest show. We're talking about celebrity guests, surprise run-ins, like all this stuff. And I guess, yeah, to your point, things feel a bit diluted, but again, to me, I can't really tell if it's because it is that way or because I feel the way I feel in our current climate watching things, you know, like it's not, there's no sort of like, it does feel different to watch it with empty arenas or semi empty arenas. We know from watching it last year that it was like, you have to really do something special if you can't put the spectacle on. And when WrestleMania is not a huge spectacle, the idea of it being very, very exciting is kind of isn't there, especially if you're not paying off any major storylines at the event.
Well, this year it is going to be a little bit different. I think we're looking at about 25,000, same stadium as the Super Bowl. So it should feel a little bit like it used to. But Andrew, I mean, we're getting two nights of it still, even though it's in the big arena. And then before that, we're getting two other nights of NXT. And that's just the WWE product leading up to it. You are shaking your head right now. Too much?
Yo, too long. Yo, too much. Yeah. Like, it is. Carlos, you are so polite. You are such a gentleman. I'm going to go the other way. Too much. I remember because SummerSlam came to Toronto maybe 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember we went to NXT, SummerSlam, Raw, and then SmackDown, and I thought I was gonna die. Like, I was sitting in Monday Night Raw and I was like broken. I'm just like, what the hell are we doing? Like, this is so much. And so for me, it just kills the joy, because like when you're a kid and when I was a kid, the Calgary Stampede was everything. We'd wait for the day to go to the Calgary Stampede, the greatest outdoor show on earth, and it was the best. Then came the year where I worked the Stampede, and I was there 10 days in a row. It ain't that fun, 10 days in a row. So it's just like with anything, it's like it just kind of kills the joy. And what Carlos said of this, like, you can't build it the same way. But I remember when, like, Slaughter was going to take on Hogan, I think at a SummerSlam, or was it a Mania?
And, Mania.
And that was like,
Mania 7.
You look forward to it. Look forward to it. And that's why Macho Man and Hogan breaking up, you know, their tag team and wrestling at a big show still resonates today. That's why HBK and Angle still resonates today, because there was such long buildups to it. And Seth Rollins said it a while ago in an interview, fans don't respect the payoff anymore, but it's because if it happens on a Monday and then it's Thursday, so much stuff has already happened that you forgot about that thing they did on the Monday. And that's what kills, like, that's what's killing the industry, because too much stuff is happening that we can't keep up anymore. You have to either be all in, and if you're not, you're kind of lost. And I'm a fan that's lost repeatedly throughout the year. And then when the pay-per-view comes up, it's just my loyalty to the pay-per-view that I catch up, and then I'm like, I semi-care, you know?
I'll say for me, though, it's like, it's like the too much to me is like too many pay-per-views. It makes Mania and SummerSlam and Royal Rumble less when you have pay-per-views leading up to it, like only a few weeks prior, and you've got to build a story or make an event out of that pay-per-view when you could be saving it all for Mania.
There's so much content. Now, Trev, it was funny because so you immediately knew WrestleMania 7 was Hulk Hogan and Sergeant Slaughter. Yep. And you know what? With a little thinking, I'd get there too. And I can tell you that 6 was Hogan and the Warrior. And I think 5 was Macho Man and Hogan. So we can go back and we can remember all of that. But instead of 7, if I said WrestleMania 27, you know what I mean? Like, did it become diluted for you later on? Because everything after about maybe 9, 10, 12, like, blurs for me.
In all fairness, I've been watching through the pay-per-views from WCW and WWF in order during the pandemic. So I just a couple weeks ago watched WrestleMania 7.
Okay.
Yo, what dedication, man.
He's got nowhere to do stand-up right now. There's no stages open.
The other day I watched UK Rampage 92. And, you know what? I just watched Wrestle War 92, Sting's Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance. That was the last thing I watched. And now coming up next, I think, is either, Clash of the Champions 19 is the next thing on my list to check out. The start of the NWA Tag Team Title Tournament in 1992. Wow. So so I've been going through and rewatching it. So I just literally watched Hogan and Slaughter the other week. So that one was fresh on my mind. It does get harder, though, like as it gets on, you know, I think once the In Your Houses started up, you know, I think that was like and then WCW was trying to match pay-per-view for pay-per-view. You know, it really got hard to keep track. Like I used to have like the history of the WWF title memorized. Like I could go from Nature Boy Buddy Rogers all the way up to the current champion without having to look at anything. And there's no way I could do that now, because you had which world title, you know, like was it the world championship or the world heavyweight championship? So it you know, there are times where it's gotten to be like it's hard to keep track of everything that's happened. I will say I don't mind the 2 days of WrestleMania, because the 7-hour pay-per-view was getting to be like hard to, it's a hard thing to convince my fiance to let me do. Like, I'm just gonna put this on all day. Like the good TV is going to be nothing but wrestling for 7 hours. Like, that's a hard sell.
Sorry, like, this coming from the man who just admitted that he's about to go watch the NWA title tag team title tournament of 1992.
I can watch that on my computer and not bother him.
Oh, okay, I see.
WrestleMania's got to be on the good TV. so it's like, I kind of prefer the 2 days because it breaks up that sort of like, because let's be honest, the past few years before the pandemic, WrestleMania has been like a lot of exposition in between each matches. Like, a lot of just like, let's stretch this out for no reason. And it's like, you know, like we're here for the matches. We're not so much a little bit for the special entrances, but not so much for a bunch of the extra crap that they've been doing. And so I don't mind the 2 days, but yeah, I mean, it is like, you know, with 2 days of NXT now and then 2 days of WrestleMania, and then everybody else has their like, you know, WrestleMania weekend stuff that they're trying to capitalize, all the other promotions that throw in their little, like trying to steal some of the attention away. It gets hard to keep track of everything that's going on. And it's very easy to get lost.
The 2 days thing, I do like. Andrew?
I was going to say, I was talking to a friend the other day and I said that at the core of pro wrestling, all I want is for the wrestlers to cut a promo in front of, in a locker room with Mean Gene Okerlund telling me why they're the better wrestler. The other person responds, give me some sort of run-in or screw job of another person's match, and then I will watch that. Like, it's just so simple to me, but like if you watch a Raw or a SmackDown, it's so long right now. And what Kid Trevor said of like just drawing it out, because I feel like I went back and I watched like a WrestleMania 3 or 4 in pandemic. And what struck me was the lack of montages, you know, and that's a product of the time. They just didn't have that technology to make a package for every feud, but there was something nice about it. Whereas now it is like, I feel like it's half montages and catching up and recap clips and then half wrestling, which is why it's 7 hours. I think you could fit in a 7 hour pay-per-view into 3.5 hours if you cut all the promo packages aside from the big yeah. matches, your main event.
Sure. But that's even that's like going to a Raw.
I'm sure that's why watching. Oh.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, like going to a Raw live is feels like that. It's like someone comes in, cuts a promo, you stop down, and then you're stopping down for however long because they put the montage up with the commercial, the match happens, and you stop down for so long. You know, like there's all that going on in that, even just the weekly shows, never mind the 7 hour extravaganza.
Well, it's now we're all referring to this. It's now a television show. It is not wrestling for especially for WWE. It's sports entertainment. It's a television property and it's content to go in a streaming service as opposed to what's happening there. You're very much secondary if you're a fan of if you're there and at a live event and you're a live fan, which there aren't many of right now. But I mean, I know, for instance, K-Trev, you're someone who frequents so much indie wrestling, and I'm guessing it's got to be for that fact. Going to an indie show is a completely different experience than it is going to a TV taping.
I love indie shows because they're gross places to watch good wrestling. Like it's like indie shows. God. What the fuck is wrong with wrestling fans and bathrooms? Wrestling fans wreck a public washroom like nothing else. And they are so gross, but it's where you see good wrestling. It's where you see guys selling crap. Just like you got 5 minutes, make this land, go do it. You got no video packages. You got to explain to me why you hate this guy and why he hates you without the advantage of all the other stuff. It's like literally down to just good old fashioned wrestling. You got to tell the story. It's the ballet of violence. And that's what I'm there to see. I want you to tell me the story in the ring. By the end of this fight, I want to know why he lost because of what I saw happen in there. And you know, it's where you see great stuff. Like Smash Wrestling, when Letterkenny came out, they reached out to me. They were fans of the shows and asked me to come out and do some stuff with them. And I got to meet a lot of the guys and get to know them. And you know, that also, there's that personal aspect. When you get to know the wrestlers in person, you become way more invested in what happens in their careers. But like just getting to really see the whole production get put together. But like I got to see some really great like live shows and really fun matches. I saw Tyson Dukes versus Cody Rhodes in a gymnasium you know, out in Etobicoke, and you know, like Cody Rhodes putting over Tyson Dukes. in the, you know, I'm only going to see that in a gymnasium in Etobicoke. You know, getting to see like Zack Sabre Jr. versus Mike Elgin in a bar in downtown Toronto. Getting, you know, I remember going out to Cactus Pete's and seeing like,
classic AWF.
Seeing you know, Sin and Flesh, yep, Gordon and you know, Just Joe and Joey Legend and, yep, the Club Stud Tony Mack and
La the Felina Jaguar
VJ Singh, and but just like just watching, like, you know, like I don't know who these guys are, but one of them's going to explain to me why he's a face in 2 seconds, and the other one's going to show me why he's a heel in 2 seconds, and I'm going to know who to boo for, and I'm going to wait to see if someone jumps off the top rope and puts another hole in the ceiling, because I can see that's happened 3 times based on the holes in the ceiling and the placement of the ring.
Good old Cactus Pete's. For those listening in Toronto right now, yep, you know exactly what we're talking about. That was Hutchie's old place, where he used to run up the Apocalypse Wrestling Federation. All right, well, we're going into Mania here. We might as well dive into it. Someone already mentioned Roman Reigns, but I'm curious. We've got 2 days of this. We've got 2 nights. It is split up. I think we all agree it's nice not to sit through 8 hours. It's 2 4-hour hours. But what is drawing you in this year, despite the shorter builds, Carlos? What is drawing you in?
Daniel Bryan, Edge, Roman Reigns. That's like the number one thing for me. Like, I've loved, ever since Roman came back, just that's the one thing primarily that's actually drawn me to WWE. Is him, his run as the heel, as the head of the table right now. And I can see so many possibilities for where they could take it. Like, I think this is the best. I've always, you know, I've always had this love-hate thing with Roman. I think a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of his career, like, everyone was like, well, turn him heel already. Like, let's do the thing we want to do. And we're here now. Edge is back. He can go. He looks great. And I don't usually love a forced sort of triple threat thing. Like, I do like to see for a championship head-to-head, like, let's go one, you know, mano a mano. But this one is kind of special, I think. And what's kind of cool is that all these guys are, in a way, like, they almost shouldn't be there. Like, they've all been put out by one thing or another. And so they have an opportunity here to be like, I don't know, to just show people that they can really just do it. And they're all amazing. That's what's got me excited.
Now, we're sitting here as four Canadians, and we've already brought up Edge once, because to me, this was handed to WWE. Here is a guy who had to retire, not on his own terms, due to the fact that his neck essentially broke, or almost broke. Then he does come back after 7 years, great showing in the Rumble, tears up his tricep, has to take more time off, makes the comeback again. Oh my goodness, what a hero. Oh, sorry, no, we're going to make him a heel, and we're going to throw Daniel Bryan into the mix. This, Andrew, I'm going to you here. This absolutely blew my mind at how they didn't just run with this. And now's the time they're going with the yes guy, when his time to me was years ago.
Yeah, it's this particular feud is interesting. On the flip side, I like that there's an unpredictability to this storyline. Yeah. And we're not quite sure who to root for right now, because all three can be seen as the face or the heel. Like, it's an odd thing where Roman is in this interesting thing where, like, you like him now more because he's the bad guy. He's the anti-hero. And then Edge is in the same boat. And then Daniel Bryan a year ago was a heel, like a year and a half ago was a heel. And so I kind of like that. But I do think, for me, the thing that I'm really drawn into, it's odd, Cesaro and Seth Rollins, because I am such a Cesaro fan. And to see him get a Mania singles match is long overdue. And I just know that he's probably going to lose, and he's never truly going to get the push he deserves. But seeing this guy wrestle, seeing him live, that to me was the gift. WWE was handed this man who is a specimen unlike any other, with a move that gets the crowd working like no other. And they just botched it every time. And dude has been put in some terrible angles, and every single time we the people have spoken and made him a fan favorite. So I'm just so happy to see Cesaro in that spot.
You know, I think you're right. I think he is going to lose, but you will get the 37 rounds of the swing for WrestleMania 37. So you will get that satisfaction. You know, K-Trev, the last time you were chatting was about being in a small venue and seeing two performers and immediately knowing who is the heel and who is the babyface. And we just talked about the main event and the questionable nature of all of the characters, especially Edge. You're getting shades of gray here, and we've seen more and more shades of gray. Is that good for your WrestleMania main event, in your opinion?
Here's my thing with wrestling is you need the extreme good and the extreme bad for the guy in the middle to make sense. And the one of the things that wrestling storylines are really suffering from is there's not enough clear, pure baby faces anymore. Everybody wants to be the cool guy. Everyone wants to be Steve Austin. They want to be in between, but you can't be in between anything if no one is the paragon of virtue. If there's no one out there that is the guy upholding the rules, upholding fair play, upholding, you know, goodness, the hero for the children to look up to, you need that so that you can have villains. And if there's no villains and there's no heroes, then the guy in between is just boring. And so what I like about this is we've got Roman Reigns, you know, he's the heel. He's the bad guy. He's got Paul Heyman in his corner. He's got his cousin running interference. They're doing the beautiful like recreation of the golden triangle. So you know that that's your bad guy. Then you got Daniel Bryan, everyone's favorite hero, Daniel Bryan, the perennial underdog, the vegan kid who became world champion, that weird, gross hippie from Washington that became the champion. He's the hero. And then Edge is, everyone loves him because he's the returning guy, but Edge was at his best when he's not doing the right thing. Edge is at his most successful when he's the ultimate opportunist, when he's the rated R superstar. So I like this because you don't know where Edge is going to go. Like, is he going to walk out of this a face? Is he going to walk out of this a heel? Or is he going to be the new Austin? Is he going to be the new guy that you boo on your cheer based on who he's punching at that exact moment? But I also have to think, with all three of these guys' histories, this has to be a safety net decision. Put these three guys in the ring, because you got two guys with a history of neck injuries and a guy who is literally just very recently recovered from cancer. And is, you know, like, they're being really strict about their pandemic policy. A lot of it because Roman is still immunocompromised. So I have to imagine this story set up the way it is because anything could go wrong in this climate. But I'm excited to see what happens. But they need to establish baby faces. They need more good guys for anyone else to make sense.
I would suggest the one person that is out there that is a baby face will be on night one. And I think that they've done, it's unfortunate that Drew McIntyre's push has come during the pandemic. I think we can all agree he got robbed last year of his heroic moment after so many years in the industry with no fans. And I'm guessing that night one will see him get the win with fans in attendance, but it also kind of takes away with how strong they've kept Bobby Lashley and formerly of the Hurt Business. I know there's a lot there, Carlos, but I'd say, you know, he could be the babyface happy moment out of these two nights.
Drew McIntyre, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. He totally got robbed last year. This guy's the whole package, right? And he's like in the WWE mold, the full package. So for all intents and purposes, he should be the guy. It's just the timing was just so bad. It just couldn't have been worse for him. As far as Bobby Lashley's concerned, like, I feel like he could beat anybody. Like, he's the guy, he's this big guy who should be able to beat anybody. I know a little bit about the lead up to their story, because this is one of those things where I haven't been able to follow along with the two of them. I know about the Hurt Business being broken up, but from what I understand, it's like they've positioned him as being kind of afraid of Drew McIntyre, which to me doesn't really make sense. Bobby Lashley shouldn't be afraid of anything. Shouldn't be afraid of anyone. Am I wrong here? Am I getting the context wrong, or what's going on?
Well, Bobby Lashley, in our minds, like, he's wanted to fight Brock Lesnar for 10 years now.
Yeah.
but legitimately could fight Brock Lesnar. Like, this is a guy who could take on arguably one of the baddest men on the planet. So you're right, Carlos. That doesn't make sense that he would be afraid of anybody. And we talk about gifted, you know, things offering to the WWE. The gift here was that both of these men had to leave the WWE. There's the storyline that these two are cut from the same cloth. They're giants that had to go pave their own way, and they're fighting for control of something they've had to earn. They've had to come up and fight for. And you know, Drew McIntyre's last few matches with Sheamus have slapped. Like, they go hard.
Oh, yeah. And they're Sheamus best friends that like so to beat each other up.
Oh my God. And Sheamus is so underrated. Like, these last 4 months of Sheamus's, you know, little mini push, he's taken loss after loss and it's looked great. And so you're right about Drew McIntyre looking great. He's all those things, but there's something about this feud that just isn't right. And that's indicative of the product right now. And I don't mean to knock WWE, because I will watch everything they put out. I'm a fan for life, but to critique it, they're missing out on the simple stories that are right there in front of them. And they're trying to force narratives. Like, why is Braun Strowman being talked at like an idiot from Shane McMahon? Like, I just don't get it, you know? And so they're just trying to force these narratives in. Give me two people who think they're the best. One is a good guy. One is a bad guy. Who's better? And fight. That's all I want. And when I cried during Gargano and Andrade, I hadn't been watching NXT. So I didn't know anything of these two. But immediately when I saw the match and I saw what was going on, I'm like, oh, that's the good guy. That's the bad guy. Oh, you're going to fight to the end of time and I will cry. That's all I want.
Okay, so good guys and bad guys, because I do have one, and K-Trev, you had mentioned that they're not building these differences. I think there is a potential star-making moment to come, but it's not on the men's side. It's on the women's side. We just saw Bianca Belair win the Royal Rumble, and finally, they figured out that Sasha Banks is a much better, full of attitude heel than she is a babyface. So I think that they position these two together. You have diametrically opposed personalities here, both with a lot of sass, though. But if they play this out properly, it might actually be, I do believe, it could be the main event for night one of WrestleMania. The star-making opportunity here might actually be Bianca Belair.
She's incredible, and she deserves, like, all of this attention, and she deserves this opportunity to run. I mean, like, anyone who's been following the NXT, if you ever go back and watch any of the NXT combines where they do just the fitness events, I mean, she is a machine, a super athlete, and she's entertaining to watch. She's good on camera. She's got tons of attitude. She's got that unique giant ponytail weapon. Like, I mean, there's so many elements to her that make her an entertaining champion. And I mean, by far, like, one of the strongest women who's ever laced boots. That deadlift press that she does, I don't care. That is hard. That is hard work to do. I mean, that is incredible core strength. And I'm excited about this, because Bianca Belair could easily be a heel. I mean, already did it in NXT.
True.
You know, it's one of those things, like, that's how she started out. She was the heel, really cocky, and got herself over by being amazing at what she does. And I mean, Sasha's one of those heels that you can't help but kind of cheer for. She's phenomenal. She's great. She's got all the attitude, and she backs it up with amazing matches. And I think this is a perfect women's championship match to put out there. I think they've done, this is like one of the women's storylines they've really invested some actual buildup in, and, you know, has been fun to watch over the weeks. And you want to see this happen. You want to see Bianca beat Sasha. And if it doesn't, if it goes the other way, if they get swerved, it's not going to kill this angle. It's going to drive this angle. I mean, this is a feud they can keep carrying for a long, long time, because these are two people you want to see beat of each other for a long time. I'm excited.
Yeah, no, that one, I mean, that one looks solid. Now, on the flip side of things, for the other women's title, Asuka is one of my favorites. She's an incredible performer, whether she is a babyface or a heel. And Rhea Ripley had also second last in the Royal Rumble. What a great way to debut on the so-called main roster. Then let's shelve her for 2 months. Oh, Charlotte can't go? All right, Rhea's going to be Asuka's opponent. To me, Carlos, this one was just kind of thrown out there and is really rather unfortunate, not just for Asuka, but for Rhea's, I guess, not first Mania, because she was on with Charlotte before. Mm-hmm. But it's not a great time for her to take the title as far as the build goes.
But this is the thing we were talking about before with, like, this being the payoff. Like, this is the big event that's supposed to be the payoff for you having stuck with it for the whole year, watched all these storylines, gotten emotionally attached to whichever heel, face, whatever wrestler that you love, see this relationship play out, and then just watch them go at WrestleMania. And when you're robbed of that, or even robbed of the anticipation of something, you know, as a fan, as a group of fans, it's kind of the right way to go story-wise. It is a bummer. Like, it's a huge bummer. And you could, like, this is how I'm looking at it right now. I could almost honestly not watch the program for 2 months leading up to a pay-per-view, like leading up to Mania. I don't know. Let's say I didn't watch anything. Don't know the storylines. Don't know the characters. And I watch the show. And if the matches are great, the matches are great. And if it makes sense, like if the storytelling in the ring makes sense, that's awesome. But if I'm someone that has been watching and I look at the lineup of what's happening now, it's puzzling. It's super confusing as to why things are playing out the way they're playing out. And that's, like, we just talked about it with Drew and Bobby Lashley, and now we're talking about it here too. It's like, there are matchups that I want to see, but I want to kind of earn them. Like, I want them to be earned. I want to see it after this relationship plays out.
Yeah.
Carlos, that's such a great thing you said about, like, earning it, because, like, I don't know who's champion most of the time. But like when I was a kid, when the Intercontinental title meant something, we can name the champions. You know, when Macho Man had it, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat had it, Mr. Perfect had it, Bret Hart had it. Like, that's when the title meant something. And now it's like you could slap as many titles onto someone and put it out there. But like, I just don't know who has the title anymore. And that's so sad to me, because like I look at someone like Asuka and I'm such a fan. Like, she's the MVP, man. And yeah, she had her unbeaten streak and all those things. It's just been like, we've never gotten the payoff, and she's never gotten the payoff she truly deserves. And this woman is losing her teeth in the ring in absolute bangers of matches. And just like, she doesn't get the credit she deserves. With that said, with the women's matches, I give them more leeway because I haven't seen enough of them that it's so like it's special to me. Like, I'm constantly blown away by their work because they're so athletic. So there is a bit of excitement for those two matches in particular, because I don't necessarily need as much of a build-up because I know they're going to deliver in the ring. Maybe it's just because like I I'm really getting into women's wrestling, and also I'm really getting into women's MMA. Like, I just like, it's something so new and fresh, and maybe it's a product of like having grown up in a time where women's wrestling just wasn't the same. So I there's a little more leeway there, but I think you make a great point of just like, we're not getting the payoffs we deserve and what they're capable of, because Arguably right now, the WWE roster from top to bottom is the greatest it's ever been. Because you could pick off 20 or 30 people, 40 people on the roster and say, any of these could be champion. Any of these could be the mid-card champion. You can build stables and stories around these people. And like MVP and Lashley, the Hurt Business really proved it. It took kind of four stragglers, put them together. You had gold, but you're not getting those payoffs.
I'll be honest, I had no idea why, like, I didn't know Rhea and Asuka was a storyline until this week. And
well, you missed it by a week. I mean, it started last week. It really was just thrown together. And part of that was, of course, due to Charlotte being pulled off the card. And there's a whole long line to go along with that with COVID. But you're right. You're right. It's thrown together. Could you imagine?
But I want to see them fight. You know, I saw that on the marquee. I saw that on the lineup, and I was like, well, that's going to be a good one. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see that. I know what Rhea Ripley can do. I know what Asuka can do. I want to see them get into a ring and smash heads. You know, I'm excited to see it, but I wish I knew why I was seeing it.
Well, for me, it's a question of like, how are they setting the table? Like, how are you setting the table for the audience? Is it that there's this long storyline and there's a complicated relationship between these two wrestlers and that's why they're going to go at it? Or is it because we know that we're going to get a great match on the day and that's what we're accepting? So do you force a storyline onto that? It's like, you guys have been saying this entire time. I just want to see two people go at it. I want to know that they don't like each other. That's all I need. So to force like a pretend reason kind of doesn't make any sense to me. Like there can be respect too among like two faces or two like pseudo faces. Like we've seen it happen before. It doesn't make for a bad match. It doesn't even make for bad storytelling. You can turn one during the match, whatever, right? Like you don't have to explain a whole bunch of stuff leading up to it. But like, how is the table being set? Is like, that's the question for me.
All right. Well, let's end here. Let's end off with one table that has been set quite well, and we already touched on it. It's the main event of both nights. It is the three-way. And I'm just curious, before we go, to get picks from the three of you guys, because it's three shades of gray that are going in here. There's a justifiable reason for each one of these performers to win. And ultimately, this will be the last thing that fans see on night two of WrestleMania. Who is holding up the title? Daniel Bryan, Edge, Roman Reigns. Who would like to go first and present first here?
I'll jump in on this one.
There you go.
I think what my prediction will be: Edge pinning Daniel Bryan to get the belt, which then Roman gets to do the "I never lost," setting up the Battle of the Spears for SummerSlam.
All right. That's a pretty solid scenario. All right, Andrew?
I want dominance. I want the head of the table to be the head of the table. I want him to do a 3-year title run. Because when we were kids, people held titles for years, right? And so I want him to have a 3-year title run and for it to happen, and for it to top off with Roman Reigns versus The Rock.
You that's two what I years want. From now.
Give yep. him oh, two, is it 2 years? Give him
well,
a
that's
dominant
my,
that, run.
Yeah. You
don't. Daniel Bryan doesn't get anything from having a title anymore. He said it himself. This is his last full time run with the company. Edge doesn't need a title to main event pay per views, but Roman Reigns holding this title for 3 years, 2 or 3 years. That is legendary, and hopefully that will give us the long-term storytelling and payoff we are all asking for.
My thing with Edge winning, I think because he never lost the title, that for him to truly put over Roman as the next guy, he's got to take the belt from him to give it back to him. It's so that Edge can have that moment where he was beaten. He didn't have to give up the belt because of injury. He came back. He won his title back. He has that WrestleMania moment that he didn't get to enjoy his last WrestleMania because he knew he was retiring the next day. And so I think he gets to have that moment, and then him and Roman get to have that clash, and Roman gets to beat him fairly, cleanly, no questions asked. Edge gets to ride off into the sunset on his own terms this time, and Roman is now in his second run as the head of the table, and he has just squashed the comeback king. That's my take.
Edge can go hang out with Christian and AEW, and they can do their ENC run there, where tag teams are valued. Carlos, round it out here for us.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many compelling reasons for any of them, I think, honestly, to win on night two. You know, for Daniel Bryan, that's like the super happy ending. Like that's of all three of them, like that's the heroic. We get a nice happy ending to WrestleMania. For Edge, I don't know, like we talked earlier about him. He's had such bad luck and injuries, and he's just come off of another one. I can't help but think that they're looking down the line going, how much more time do we have with Edge? So maybe giving him the belt might be that way to do it, where he only has to defend it on special occasions. He gets to show up with it. He gets to flex, but it doesn't have to really work quite often to get back up to there. But I think as long as Roman Reigns walks this earth, he's going to be headlining WrestleMania. And I think that if they're going to, like, cynically speaking, even though I love where he is right now, if they're going to put the belt on anyone, it's just always going to be Roman Reigns. Like, he's just always going to have it. Like, Andrew, you said back when we were kids, someone had the belt for like 3 years. I feel like Roman Reigns had the belt for like, as long as I can remember in the modern era, it's kind of been his. He's the biggest dog in the yard. He's ahead of the table. He's the guy. And so I can fully see him. Then just slapping it on him, and it, whether it makes sense or not, it's just what's going to happen, because that's kind of what we're watching right now. Whether it makes sense or not, that ending is going to happen on a WWE show. So it is that unpredictability of it. I know I sound very much like non-committal to anyone, is because I am totally non-committal to any of these guys winning, because I like the storylines that come out of any of them. And I do think that Roman is going to be this head of the table thing with him leading up to a match against The Rock. That's not a title match. I don't think that's a title match. I think that's just a major exhibition match at some point down the line.
Yeah, that one, I mean, I could see Brock maybe next year and The Rock the year after. And those are huge, huge money programs for WWE to come. Anyway, gentlemen, I've taken a bunch of your time, but I can't thank you guys enough. This has been super fun. You know, we would be doing it at a bar, but we can't. So we're doing it here on Zoom and probably got a whole bunch of other people listening to it. Guys, listen, enjoy WrestleMania weekend. However you're watching it, hopefully you can get together, whether it be with your kids or with your pals, and have a great two nights, guys. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
Seven nights.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Good chatting with all you guys.
Thanks for listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. If you're not getting enough wrestling just on Sunday nights, keep in mind, we do shows each and every day on our Patreon. Join us at patreon.com/SNMEradio and get coverage of everything that goes on in the world of wrestling, including reviews of Monday Night Raw, AEW Dynamite, and NXT. patreon.com/SNMEradio.